be a memory.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English. On today's program, you will hear stories from John Russell, Dan Novak, Jill Robbins, and Gregory Stockel. We close with an American story. This week, it is part two of Benito Cereno. But first, here is John Russell.
A conductor in Mexico hopes to gain listeners through a new work in which a clown performs with musicians. Alondra de la Parra has led more than 100 large music groups called orchestras. They include the London Philharmonic and the Orchestre de Paris. The new performance, The Silence of Sound, puts musicians on stage rather than below the stage in an area known as the pit. Through classical music, the orchestra plays an important part in the story as the clown searches for meaning and happiness. The stories we tell in this show are just some out of the many possible stories one can come up with when listening to classical music, de la Parra told the Reuters news agency. Formal music of Western culture is often described as classical. She added, "We hope to reach a larger audience so that they fall in love with the orchestra, and also to give some comfort, dreams, imagination, and art in this difficult period of time that we are living in." Mexican clown performer Gabriela Munoz performs with the musicians. She does not speak during the performance. Instead, she acts with images, such as birds in flight. "My character is a character I've played for many years already," Munoz said. "A character is a person that appears in a story, play, or book." She added that the clown goes on a trip, or journey, to find her inner music that allows her to dance to her own rhythm. De la Parra chose music including pieces written by Claude Debussy, Sergei Prokofiev, and Igor Stravinsky, among others. She said she wanted to have different kinds of works, one after the other, that could be a very beautiful sample as an introduction to the orchestra of pieces that anybody can fall in love with immediately. The two women have been working together on the project for 6 years, recently facing issues created by the COVID-19 pandemic. "The time we're living and going through this pandemic makes it even more relevant to remind ourselves how important it is to go through emotional journeys, to continue sharing," Munoz said. The Silence of Sound will have its first performance in Mexico in July. De la Parra also plans performances in other parts of Mexico and in Europe. I'm John Russell.
Security officials in China's Henan province are working toward a new surveillance system meant to follow international students, reporters, and other suspicious people. That information comes from the Reuters news agency. Reuters examined documents published on Henan's government website. The documents were until recently publicly available online. Henan is in central China. It is the country's third largest province by population. A document published in July explained plans for the Henan system. The document says that the system will involve 3,000 facial recognition cameras that connect to national and local databases. The system will create individual files on reporters, international students, and others. The document shows the government paid $782,000 to the Chinese tech company Neusoft on September 17th. The company was given 2 months to build the system. Reuters could not confirm if the system is currently operational. China is building what security experts describe as one of the world's most advanced surveillance technology networks. The country already has millions of cameras in public places and is increasing its use of facial recognition technology and mobile phone tracking. United States-based surveillance research firm IPVM has closely followed China's growing surveillance network. It said the Henan document was notable because it named reporters as targets and showed how public security officials could quickly find them and stop them from working. The document was no longer available to the public on November 29th. The nearly 200-page document from the Henan Public Security Department does not explain why it wants to follow reporters or international students. The document also named women from neighboring countries that are illegal residents as another group of people the system should follow. The document says suspicious people must be followed and controlled. It said cameras must be able to build a dependable file for individuals whose faces are partly covered. It also said that those targeted must be searchable on databases by using a picture or searching a facial description. At least 2,000 officials and police officers will use the surveillance system. The document said reporters will be put into three groups, red, yellow, and green, in decreasing order of risk. A warning will be set off if a reporter registers at a Henan hotel, buys a ticket, or crosses the provincial border. The document also said the system should be able to follow the movements of international students through methods such as mobile phone positioning and travel activity. It said students should be followed especially closely during important dates such as the country's National Day or the yearly meeting of Parliament. Press freedom groups say the ruling Chinese Communist Party has increased control over the media since President Xi Jinping took office in 2012. In February, the Foreign Correspondents Club of China, or FCCC, said China used coronavirus prevention measures, fear, and restrictions into the country to limit foreign reporting in 2012. The Chinese Foreign Ministry at the time called the FCCC report baseless. It said China always welcomed media members from all countries to cover news in China when they followed the law. I'm Gregory Stockel.
Pillow fighting is moving out of the bedroom and into the boxing ring. The Pillow Fight Championship, or PFC, plans to hold its first live pay-to-watch event in Florida on January 29th. Steve Williams had the idea of turning a children's game into a professional fighting sport. The head of PFC said professional pillow fighting will have the excitement of hand-to-hand fighting without the violence of mixed martial arts, or MMA, and boxing. He said it is not a joke. It's not something where you sit there and laugh and feathers are flying, Williams told Reuters. It's serious. It's hardcore swinging with specialized pillows. The three-round fights will be available to view on sports streaming station, Fight. The male and female athletes in January's event come mostly from MMA and boxing. But Williams said the athletes are not going to get injured. The fighters don't like to get hurt, and there's a lot of people who don't want to see the blood. They want to see good competition, they just don't want to see the violence. Since many people grew up pillow fighting with friends or relatives, Williams hopes the new sport will be relatable and can grow a large audience, including children. You can call it an alternative sport, but we think it's going to have mainstream appeal, he said. Think about how they mixed country music with rap music and brought these diverse audiences together. That's what we're doing, and we hope it brings in a different kind of viewer. I'm Dan Novak.
Hello. This week on Ask a Teacher, we answer a question from Shinji in Japan. I am unsure about how to use imitate and pretend. For example, I see such sentences as, "Does your child like pretend play?" referring to acting like a superhero, for instance. But is it wrong to say, "Does your child like imitation play?" Shinji, Japan. Dear Shinji, we have all watched children as they use their imagination during play. For example, a child may pick up a stick and use it as a sword, pretending to be a hero. The simple answer to your question is no, it is not wrong to use imitation as an adjective with the noun play. But there is a difference in meaning. Let us look at the two words. When someone pretends, they are acting as if something were true. An example is the child who takes an empty shoebox and puts a doll into it. The child is pretending as they push it around the floor, saying, "This is her car." When children imitate, they are acting as if they were another person, such as an adult in their life. The child who holds a doll and sings a gentle song to it is imitating a loving parent. The child puts the doll down and covers it, saying, "My baby is going to sleep now. Please be quiet." The child is both imitating a parent and pretending that the doll is a living thing. Do you have a child who plays in this way? You may be interested to know that experts say it is very important for children to learn by imitating what they see around them and pretending with toys and other objects. Both help them use their imagination. Another word for this kind of play is make-believe. One way to help a child develop their imagination is to provide dress-up clothes and toys that look like tools and household objects. Experts also suggest it is good to play along with whatever story the child imagines and talk about what is happening to help develop their language skills. Shinji, I hope you have fun taking part in pretend play with the children in your life. You can even see adults playing at being someone else or being in another time at historical fairs and museums. What question do you have about American English? Send us an email at learningenglish@voanews.com. And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Jill Robbins.
Today, we continue the story, Benito Sereno. It was written by Herman Melville. Last week, we told how African slaves on a Spanish ship rebelled in 1799. They killed most of the Spanish sailors. Only the captain, Benito Sereno, and a few others were left alive. The leader of the rebellion was a slave named Babo. He ordered Captain Sereno to sail the ship back to Senegal, the slaves' homeland. But food and water were low, so the ship stopped at an island off the coast of Chile to get the needed supplies. When it arrived, an American ship was in the harbor. The American captain, Amasa Delano, thought the Spanish ship might be in trouble. He would offer help. Babo decided to remain close to Captain Sereno and act as if he were the captain's slave. Babo would kill him if he told Captain Delano the truth about what happened. Now, here is Shep O'Neill to continue our story.
As Captain Delano came up in his whaleboat, he saw that the other ship needed scraping, tarring, and brushing. It looked old and decayed. He climbed up the side and came aboard. He was quickly surrounded by a crowd of black men. Captain Delano looked around for the man who commanded the ship. The Spanish captain stood a little way off, against the main mast. He was young-looking, richly dressed, but seemed troubled and tired with the spirit gone out of him. He looked unhappily toward his American visitor. At the Spanish captain's side stood a small black man with a rough face. Captain Delano struggled forward through the crowd, went up to the Spaniard, and greeted him. He offered to help him in any way he could. Captain Benito Sereno returned the American's greeting politely, but without warmth. Captain Delano pushed his way back through the crowd to the gangway. He told his men to go and bring back as much water as they could. Also bread, pumpkins, sugar, and a dozen of his private bottles of cider. The whaleboat pushed off. Left alone, Captain Delano again observed with fresh surprise the general disorder aboard the ship. Some of the men were fighting. There were no deck officers to discipline or control the violent ones, and everyone seemed to do as he pleased. Captain Delano could not fully understand how this could have happened. What could explain such a breakdown of order and responsibility? He asked Don Benito to give him the full story of his ship's misfortunes. Don Benito did not answer. He just kept looking at his American visitor as if he heard nothing. This angered Captain Delano, who suddenly turned away and walked forward to one of the Spanish seamen for his answer. But he had hardly gone 5 steps when Don Benito called him back. "It is now 190 days," Don Benito began, "that the ship sailed from Buenos Aires for Lima with a general cargo, pedigree, tea, and the like, and a number of Negroes, now not more than 150, as you see, but then numbering over 300 souls. The ship was officered and well manned, with several cabin passengers, some 50 Spaniards in all. Off Cape Horn we had heavy gales." Captain Sereno coughed suddenly and almost collapsed. He fell heavily against his body servant. "His mind wanders," said Babo. "He was thinking of the disease that followed the gales, my poor, poor master. Be patient, senor. These attacks do not last long. Master will soon be himself." Don Benito recovered, and in a broken voice continued his story. "My ship was tossed about many days in storms off Cape Horn, and then there was an outbreak of scurvy. The disease carried off many whites and blacks. Most of my surviving seamen had become so sick that they could not handle the sails well. For days and nights we could not control the ship. It was blown northwestward. The wind suddenly left us in unknown waters with oppressive hot calms. Most of our water was gone. And we suffered terribly, especially after a deadly fever broke out among us. Whole families of blacks and many Spaniards, including every officer but myself, were killed by the disease." Don Benito paused. He looked down at the black man at his side. Babo seemed satisfied. The Spanish captain saw him take his hand from the knife hidden under his shirt. Captain Delano saw nothing. His mind was filled with the terrible tale he had just heard. Now he could understand why the other captain seemed so shaken. He took Don Benito's hand and promised to give him all the help possible. He would give him a large permanent supply of water and some sails and equipment for sailing the ship. And he also promised to let Don Benito have 3 of his best seamen for temporary deck officers. In this way, the San Dominique could, without delay, start for Concepcion. There, the ship could be fixed and prepared for its voyage to Lima. Don Benito's face lighted up. He seemed excited by Captain Delano's generous offer. But Babo appeared troubled. This excitement is bad for Master, Babo whispered, taking Don Benito's arm and with soothing words gently drawing him aside. When Don Benito returned, Captain Delano observed that his excitement was gone. Captain Delano decided to talk of other matters, but the Spanish captain showed no further interest. He answered Captain Delano's questions with sharp words, and suddenly, with an angry movement, he walked back to Babo. Captain Delano watched the two men whispering together in low voices. It made an ugly picture, which Captain Delano found so extremely unpleasant that he turned his face to the other side of the ship. Their actions made Delano suspicious of Captain Sereno. He began to wonder about him, his behavior, his coughing attacks, his weakness, his empty, wild looks. Was he really half mad, or a faker playing a part? One moment, Captain Delano had the worst suspicions of Don Benito, but the next, he felt guilty and ashamed of himself for having such doubts about the man. Presently, Don Benito moved back toward his guest, still supported by his servant. His pale face twitched. He seemed more nervous than usual, and there was a strange tone in his husky whisper as he spoke. "May I ask how many men you have on board, senor?" Captain Delano became uneasy, but answered, "About 25 all total." "And at present, senor, all on board?" "All on board," Captain Delano answered. "And will be tonight, senor?" At this last question, Captain Delano looked very seriously at Don Benito, who could not return the look, but dropped his eyes to the deck. Captain Delano could think of only one reason for such a question, but no, it was foolish to think that these weak and starving men could have any idea of seizing his ship. But still, he remained silent. "And will they be aboard tonight?" Again, the question from Don Benito. Captain Delano decided to answer truthfully. Some of his men had talked of going off on a fishing party about midnight, and he told Don Benito this. As he answered, Captain Delano again looked straight at Don Benito, but the Spanish captain refused to meet his eyes. Then, as before, he suddenly withdrew with his servant, and again the two men began whispering to each other in low voices. Captain Delano tried to push the worry from his mind. But what were those two strange men discussing? That will be our story next week.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.